This is WMUK's West Southwest. I'm Gordon Evans. Coming up, Rebecca Thiel talks with Michigan Department of Natural Resources Deer Management Specialist Chad Stewart on the danger that chronic wasting disease poses to the state's deer population. But first, in 2013, the city of Kalamazoo released a report showing that black motorists were more than twice as likely as whites to be pulled over by police. The year-long study by Lambert Consulting, based in Pennsylvania, was commissioned by Kalamazoo's Public Safety Department. The issue of race and policing will be the subject of a public forum in Kalamazoo on Thursday. Among the panelists will be Kalamazoo's Public Safety Chief, Jeff Hadley, and Mark Fancher, who is staff attorney for the ACLU of Michigan. Mark Fancher joins us. Thank you for taking some time to speak with us.
Thank you so much for having me.
So racial profiling is one of the things that you really work on with the ACLU. How prevalent is it throughout the state of Michigan?
Well, it depends upon who you ask. If you ask law enforcement, many times they will insist that their officers are specifically trained not to engage in unlawful racial profiling. They will acknowledge that they engage in profiling, but not racial profiling that's unlawful. But if you ask people of color, they will insist that on more than a few occasions, and almost routinely, they find themselves the subject of that practice. And it's very difficult to quantify or to identify in a way that is persuasive to those who don't believe that it actually goes on.
What kind of profiling do the police say they're doing if it's not racially based?
Well, what they'll say is that, it's usually in response to a description of a suspect. You know, say, for example, someone who's engaged in serial burglaries has been identified by witnesses as a person who's 6'3" tall and weighs 180 pounds. And, well, they will look for people who fit that description. That's a form of profiling. And in many cases, that is perfectly legitimate and lawful. But what's not permitted is to say that, well, because the suspect is African American, then we are going to stop every African American that we see. That is an overly broad classification for anyone who's looking for a suspect, and that does violate the constitutional rights of those who are stopped.
So as you said, it is tough to get good, hard, quantifiable data on how much racial profiling is actually happening. Did the city of Kalamazoo take the right approach in hiring this outside firm to come in and examine police practices to try and get at how much racial profiling was going on?
Oh, absolutely. And we applaud the department for doing that. That took a great deal of courage. It took a great deal of professionalism and a good deal of integrity to do it. And even more than that, their willingness to make public the fact that they did have some problems and challenges that they were going to work on. And in our work, we have not hesitated to point to them as what we regard as almost a model of how a department should approach these issues when they're faced with either suspicion or accusations that their officers have been engaged in illegal practices.
Are there any other cities in Michigan which have taken a similar approach?
There are cities that we have talked to, with about doing that, and the extent to which they have followed through varies. But, you know, I do, at least as far as I know, I think that Kalamazoo probably leads the pack in terms of actually making not only definitive moves in the right direction, but trying to follow through and make corrections.
So once a city like Kalamazoo or perhaps another town, if they do a similar study, has this data that tells them, yes, black motorists are much more likely to be pulled over than white motorists, what are the next steps that the city should be taking to try and address that?
I think it's really more a matter of case-by-case approach, and the circumstances that lead to these practices may vary and may differ from department to department. And the consultants who conduct these studies, at least as far as I know, will also take the next step of providing prescription to the department for how to cure whatever problems that the department has. You know, much of racial profiling is the result of what is regarded as implicit bias. That means that many times the officers don't even know that they are engaged in what we would regard as racial profiling. They're just acting based on a set of stereotypes that they may have bought into or presumptions that they make based on social conditioning and prevailing attitudes in the society without any real deliberate attempt to single people out simply because of their race. And what can happen very often when a department works with a consultant is that those types of implicit biases can be identified, pointed out to the officers involved, and they may be able to make adjustments in terms of how they go about doing it. But, you know, by the same token, there are also individual officers who deliberately engage in racial profiling. They are very much aware of the biases that they have, and they act on them, either because of whatever prejudices they carry or because of what exists sometimes in some departments, a culture that leads people to believe that people of a certain community or a certain race are more inclined to engage in criminal conduct, and they will act in that way.
Do we have to acknowledge here that there are probably some officers who routinely get called in or called to situations where they do end up dealing with African Americans, perhaps more than they deal with whites, and that this may affect their perceptions and lead to some of the things that you're talking about on an individual basis, and perhaps that spreads through the department and does create the culture you're talking about?
It does, and it extends beyond the jurisdictions that they're assigned to. You know, I had a conversation once with a police officer who took me to task for always raising the issue of race and racial profiling and that kind of thing. And he explained that most officers, including himself, don't go on patrol with the idea of looking for black people to stop, that that's not what they do. And what I asked him, please tell me if I'm telling the truth or not, that when you're assigned to patrol in an upscale white suburban community, your traffic stops generally go something along the lines of, hey, you know, you're going kind of fast there. Can I see your license and registration? Oh, I see you live on Maple Avenue. Do you know the Richardson family? You know, I used to cut their grass. Well, look, you're going a little fast. I'm going to have to write you a citation. You can take care of that. You have a nice day. I say, but when you are assigned to patrol in Detroit or in Flint, is it or is it not true that you jump out of the car with your gun drawn, you jerk open the door to the motorist vehicle, you snatch him out of the car, you put him face down on the pavement or you slam him up against the wall, you may put him in cuffs, you may be screaming profanity at him, and you're doing all kinds of other things that you would never do in the suburbs? And he very candidly admitted that, yes, that's what he and his colleagues frequently do. But he was quick to say that it's not because of race. He said it's because they presume that in those communities where crime rates are so high, that they're at risk, and that what they have to do is from the very outset to establish their authority and to make sure that anybody that they're stopping who may be inclined to violence will not have any thought of trying to get violent with them. But what I think that he and other officers need to understand is that the individuals that they frequently stop in these communities are not the criminals that they're afraid of. They're stopping people who are trying to get to a second job. They may be stopping a mom who's trying to get across town to pick up her daughter from band practice. They may be stopping a young man who's trying to get across town to take his grandmother to her doctor's appointment. All of these are honest people. The people that they're afraid of are the people who are watching them and who are doing their best to avoid coming into contact with them. But when they create these kinds of situations, when they have these types of encounters with honest, hardworking people in these communities, they create a level of tension and frustration and fear, which is something that spreads like a contagion, and it creates conditions in those communities which are conducive to overreactions on either side and incidents of violence, which very often lead to many of the tragedies that we've seen across the country in the last number of months.
We did a series last year on the idea of the trust gap that exists between Kalamazoo Public Safety and many people in the neighborhoods where they're supposed to be serving and protecting. And Chief Hadley said that he was trying to build more community trust. That was his goal. He admitted there are many officers who don't like that idea on his own force. But he also said he had some sympathy for officers who do feel that they're harassed by citizens when they're simply trying to do their job, that they're often, you know, called names and that sort of thing simply when they go into a neighborhood and patrol and haven't even pulled anybody over. I guess I'm wondering, you know, is there a way to bridge what we might call the trust gap between public safety and citizens? And does some of it come down to the citizens themselves, perhaps showing some respect and some trust for police officers?
Well, in order to get respect, you have to give it. And, you know, on the one hand, you know, I know that it's a tough job, but that's the job that police officers sign on to. But if they want to minimize the tension and the harassment or the name-calling that they encounter, they can take an approach. And, you know, I'm not saying that I individually or the ACLU fully endorse it, but many law enforcement organizations have begun to look seriously at community policing, where the police begin to, outside of their normal patrols where they're looking for crime, look to try and build honest and good relationships in the neighborhoods and the communities where they're often assigned, so that they're not just some, you know, outside occupying force that's coming into the neighborhood and roaming the streets looking for lawbreakers. These are people that the community knows. These are people who are on some levels and in some respects friends. They're people that they look to help them when they're in difficult situations. And I'll tell you that, you know, even in a city like Detroit, where there's very often a huge trust gap between police and the community, there are communities where the community policing approach has been attempted and tried. And if you go and you talk to residents in those neighborhoods, they will swear by it. "Quote unquote," their police officers. They know them. They trust them. And it's not a question simply of just the police getting along with the community. It helps to prevent crime, and the neighborhood knows that. If you don't trust the police, if you're afraid of the police, even if you have information that could help to apprehend people living in your neighborhood who are causing all kinds of problems for the neighborhood, you're probably going to be reluctant to share that. But if you trust the police, if you know who they are, if you know that they're going to go and get these people, then you're more inclined to share that information. So from, you know, the community standpoint and from law enforcement standpoint, that kind of thing can make a lot of sense.
Is there any danger that focusing on racial profiling and, you know, harassment, those sort of things, can make the police tentative in how they deal with people, especially in an area where there is a high rate of crime?
Well, I think that law enforcement professionals would be, you know, would have their own opinions about that. But certainly from our perspective, no, it shouldn't, because what the police should be doing is not looking for people who are of a particular race, but they should be looking for people who've demonstrated conduct or in other ways provided solid evidence that can be documented that they're engaged in criminal activity or they're about to. And if they're really honestly pursuing law enforcement in that way, it won't matter who they stop or who they look at, because they will have actual evidence of crime that they can point to whenever they're accused of being engaged in racial profiling. You know, they'll be able to say, no, we didn't stop this person because of his or her race. We stopped them because we saw them do A, B, C, and D. And that's really what the law requires.
Mark Fancher, thank you very much for your time.
No, thank you so much for having me.
Mark Fancher is a staff attorney for the ACLU of Michigan. He will be one of the panelists for a public forum in Kalamazoo on Thursday on race and policing. A link with more details can be found at WMUK.org.